Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. 1 o'clock hour, Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, CBD products curated for life. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Elijah Campbell here with you on a Wednesday. Darren will be back tomorrow. Reminder, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Let's head back over to St. Thomas Sports Park and hear from Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan, you've got AJ coming off his best game yet, Julio back in the mix. Both of those guys missed big chunks of the last game with the Colts. How much will it help this offense having both of those guys ideally on Sunday?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, obviously, they're huge playmakers for us, so having them out there is the best case scenario. So, you know, hopefully we can get them both out there and playing big for us. They made huge plays for us at different times, both of them throughout the season. So, you know, hopefully we can lean on them again.
Guys, obviously want to take care of the football, but with the Colts so good at taking the ball away, I think they've got like 16 takeaways already. Is that an extra point of emphasis this week as you go into the game?
Yeah, no doubt. Obviously, you mentioned the number of turnovers that defense has gotten so far. Earlier in the season, they're going after it. You know, you see them hammering at the football, you know, almost every rushing play. There's somebody coming in, hammering at the football. 53 especially does a really good job. He's accurate with it, and he creates a lot of fumbles, you know, due to the hammer. So that, and then, you know, they're making plays on the back end as well. So we have to be smart, have to be secure with the football, and take care of it.
Passing game's gone up a level, it seems, with the AJ back in. How much of a difference does he make with the separation and for the play action?
Yeah, no doubt. AJ's been huge for us. You look at the past couple weeks and what he's been able to do. You know, he's making plays. He's getting himself open. He's great with the ball in his hands and made some big plays down the field for us this last week. So, I mean, he's an all-around player for us and made huge plays and want to keep it going.
What's been the difference, do you think, Ryan?
Sack numbers to go down so drastically.
What's different, you said?
Yeah, what's changed? Why have the sack numbers gone down so drastically?
You know, we're playing better football. You know, as the season goes on, you know, you look at lessons learned and you know, being efficient, getting the ball out, not being in long yardage situations, and trying to help your O-line out. And then they're obviously blocking them whenever we do drop back. So it all works together, and I'm glad it's working that way.
What's been the difference, Ryan, do you think? You touched on AJ there. The production has jumped so much the last 2 weeks. Do you think it's just a matter of him being healthier, or, you know, is it more reps that you get? Two guys have had? Anything you can point to, you know, over the last couple of weeks?
No, definitely not more reps. You know, I feel confident throwing the ball. We've had thousands of reps over the past couple of years. So I think more than anything is more opportunities that he's getting. You know, we're getting a little bit of a groove offensively, you know, moving the football. So that's going to create more opportunities. And then, you know, he's feeling better. You know, obviously he was out for a few weeks with an injury. So to get him back and get him healthy was huge.
But a deep ball like the one down the left sideline to AJ the other day, how quickly do you know it's on target, and what tells you that? Is it just a feel thing?
Yeah, just a feel thing. Usually you know when you let it go. Either you feel really good about it or it's kind of like maybe, you know. That one I felt really good about, and thankfully AJ, you know, went and got it for me.
Even those ones, though, that seem maybe, do you feel like a guy like AJ Brown, you can count on him for some of those that come out and you just – may not know if it's going to be catchable?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, look at our receivers, really have big physical targets all the way around pretty much. So when you have that kind of size and skill outside and guys that can play the ball in the air, you know, feel really good about, okay, it's tight coverage. I need to put it up. May not be a perfect throw, but I trust my guy to go make a play. So definitely having those guys outside that have shown that they can go make plays is huge.
See from the Colts, maybe since you guys last played them, and what do you kind of know what you're getting when you face off against them?
They're playing really good ball right now, and you look at their last four games. You know, they're playing really good ball. Defensively, they've always been sound, right? They're not going to give you anything. They're going to play their game and play really sound football. Obviously, the turnovers have been huge for them, so that's going to be a point of emphasis for us is to be smart with the football and take care of it and take advantage of the opportunities that we do get. They don't give you anything, so you have to earn it. But when you do get plays against a good defense that you can make, you got to take advantage of them.
What's it been like having Michael Pruitt back? He seems to have a bigger role this year than he did last year, and he just came in right before the season started.
Oh, it's been huge. He's played big for us. Had to play down the middle last week. Huge play, obviously, the touchdown catch down in the red zone. He's a kind of a do-it-all guy for us. Probably gets more credit as a blocking guy, but as you saw last week, can get himself open and make plays in the pass game as well. So thankful to have him back on our side.
Do you have any advantage of having a three-game lead on the division this early? Midway through the season.
Yeah, it's a long season, but division opponent on the road, team that we respect and is playing really good ball right now. This is a big game for us, no doubt.
Before, after a win like you guys had over the Chiefs, a lot of guys will stand there and say, hey, we want our respect. We want the league to recognize us as a premier team. But that's not the case now. Is there a shift in mindset to where hey, we just got to put it behind us and go to the next game? What's with that?
Yeah, no doubt. I think we're seven games into a long season. So we need to keep improving, keep getting better week in and week out. We need to be playing our best football, late into the year. So it really doesn't matter. Yeah, it's a good start, but it doesn't matter what you've already done. It matters what you're going to do next. So have to be able to build on the momentum that we've kind of created, but at the same time stay hungry, stay fighting for ways to improve each and every day in practice, in the meeting room, and then go out and play well on Sunday.
That's Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Titans. Face the media. He always says the right things, Chase. It's usually not the kind of thing where you're sitting there listening to that and saying, oh my gosh, can you believe what Tannehill says? But what you get a sense for is he's got a really good presence.
He does.
He knows what to say. He's experienced. So let's talk about his game.
He has the art that Floyd used to always talk about of not necessarily saying a lot without saying anything, but he can stir his or turn his answers kind of where he wants it to go and is good at doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and doing it with a smile on his face and not really he knows how to say things without making any kind of ripples either way, positive or negative, really. It just plays it right down the middle. So let's talk about his play, because there's been a lot of it. Football Outsiders still, and they even wrote an article, Aaron Schatz, who we've had on many times before, he wrote an article explaining why the Titans' ratings, power ratings, statistical breakdown is so low. They're still ranked number 20 mm-hmm. in the NFL. The Colts have a higher ranking, but the Titans are 5-2. So what he basically said was, if you go back to the debacle against the Cardinals,
right,
that was a huge, huge minus. They played so poorly in that game. They did not, even though they beat the Seahawks, that was a pretty interesting game back and forth. It was, and the Seahawks, of course, have not turned into a great team, so that probably hurts them a little bit there.
Oh, Russell's
and then
hurt.
They lost to the Jets. And in the rankings, there is no makeup for injuries. There's no factor for, well, you played without some of these top players. But that was a factor in that game. All that being said, they're moving in the right direction. As you heard that, Ryan Tannehill saying, we've just got to keep getting better. We've gotten better. We've got to keep getting better. Ryan Tannehill's numbers are climbing, but still overall, not overly, they're not wowing you yet. If he keeps playing the way he's played the last couple weeks, eventually they're going to get there. But the number one thing that I think is interesting, his passer ratings are still very pedestrian. When you throw the QBR in there, which adds his mobility factor and him as a runner, he's back up in the top 10. He's ranked number 8 in the NFL with that. And I think that illustrates some things. Matthew Stafford is actually number 1 in QBR. Tom Brady is 2, not because he's running, but just his passing numbers are that good. Aaron Rodgers, 3. Kyler Murray, 4. Jared Allen, 5. Patrick Mahomes, 6. Russell Wilson, 7. Tannehill, 8. 8 to 10, 12, somewhere in there, is still where I would like to envision him as an NFL quarterback. He's 23-10 as a starter for the Titans. That's, you know, that's really the whole thing. But for him, I think the quote he had was, "It's not where we are now.
Yeah,
it's what we're going to do."
Right.
Something to that effect. So if they're going to get there, he knows that the passing game's got to look a lot more like it did at the end of the Bills game and against the Chiefs than it has before. And that's, I think, you asked this question before, I still think that's directly tied to the protection that they give him.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what we were talking about earlier, that the protection is getting better across the board, which is obviously what you need to see. But I think the other part of this conversation with just looking at Ryan Tannehill is maybe it's as simple as he and Todd Downing are just getting on the same page. And that takes time. And we saw that, you know, we saw that with Arthur Smith, that things really started to click with him once Tannehill took over. But, you know, the thing you got to consider is Tannehill wasn't playing in those first 5.5 games. He was, you know, getting some reps with the second team, but I mean, he had a lot of film time, a lot of study time. And he has talked about that too, of he spent a lot of that time when he was the backup to Marcus Mariota, you know, just studying. And therefore, when he did come in and when he got his opportunity, he was ready. And he and Arthur Smith were able to basically just click from the start. You know, now he's been playing and Todd Downing takes over. They do have a preseason, but Tannehill didn't play. And so you were going to have to give it time. And that's where I kind of look back at training camp and, you know, how Vrabel limited practice time for some of these guys, didn't play them a whole lot in the preseason. You know, that was that a little detrimental when you had a new offensive coordinator?
Let's go back a little bit further. It took Arthur Smith a little bit of time to get settled. Now, of course, the dynamic move was to switch to Tannehill.
Right.
But I think there were, just like there were the first few weeks of this year, saying, Todd Downing, I don't know. I'm not sure. There was definitely, you know, that was... with Arthur Smith, there was a lot of that.
Sure.
But as it turned out, because I think what you're saying is true. I think each coordinator has got to find the niche. It doesn't necessarily happen the first week or two of the season. It's not instant. But it looks like the pieces are coming together if they can continue to improve and hopefully know what they're getting each week. Even if Julio Jones is a version of what we've seen so far. Not exactly sure what you're getting week to week health-wise, but if I know I've got him at least to some degree, I'm starting to figure out the role for him. If I can know I have A.J. Brown as the A.J. Brown we've come to know, which he looks a lot more like that the last 2 weeks, now you're thinking, okay, everything's coming together, and this can be a championship-level offense. You know what you have in your running back. We know that. The pass protection, steadily getting better. We didn't really get any news on the injury front today, right, for the offensive line. Still, we'll see how that comes together.
The report will come out here in a little bit.
Yeah, so we'll hopefully, knock on wood, fingers crossed, they'll have five guys out there that can do the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're facing a good front. Colts have a good defensive front. The questions with the Colts are in the secondary.
Do you feel – so this is how I feel, and I want you to tell me if you think that a lot of the fan base feels this way. I feel pretty good about the last – I'm going to say game and a half, because the offense was slow out of the gates on Monday night against the Bills, but the defense made plays – that kept a minute, and then Derek breaks that 76-yard run, and then the offense started to click. But it wasn't the full game. The full game against Kansas City, you know, I felt even in the second half when they didn't put up any points, the game was pretty much done at that point.
I thought they did a good job of managing the lead, playing the scoreboard, playing smart.
Yes.
The only blemish was the bad interception.
Was the interception, yeah.
And that Tannehill's numbers would have been like almost dead letter perfect had it not been for that one
correct.
Play.
Correct. But the way I look at it is, even though it's well documented, I feel they should win this weekend.
Yes, we did.
But I am still in the back of my mind going, all right, was the last two games just good and fluky, and are they going to come back down to where they were? Or have they truly turned the corner when it comes to this offense, and they're back to being that offense that, you know, we've seen the last few years since Tannehill took over. I'm a little skeptical just because I've been burnt as a fan so many times.
Well,
and I don't feel like I'm the only one that feels that way.
No, definitely, definitely. But this is the toughest part of their schedule. I do think it's hard to be lights out and be the same looking team every week. That's what always wows us about the NFL, is how a team can look like they're absolutely unbeatable one week, and then like, wait a minute, they lost to who? Like, there's all these jokes running around that the Jets are the best team because they beat the Titans, and the Titans beat the Bills, and the Titans beat the Chiefs. But that is what happens in this league, is there's always some goofy things where a team doesn't look good. One of the biggest questions in the league right now is, are the Chiefs going to start figuring this out at some point? They still have a pathway to get back into their division race. They've got two games with the Raiders. They've still got another game with the Chargers. So they're not sunk by any means, but there's doubts for the first time. The Titans went from being that team where it kind of looked like they weren't going anywhere in the big picture in terms of being a real contender, to now they've got people's attention. But can they piggyback off of two really big wins against really good teams and then go into Indy and win? That's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge. That's why I'm not going to sweat it that much if they lose this game in the big picture. I think this is going to be a really difficult trifecta to pull out, in my mind. That's why I will stop way, way short of yours.
I know.
You know, I think it's a coin flip game at best. I just think
they're gonna have to
favors the Colts, in my mind.
They're going to have to bring their best. I mean, it's a tough place to play. Defensively, they're going to have to continue to make stops. They're going to have to continue to protect Tannehill on the offensive side, and you're going to need both Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and maybe Julio Jones, and then somebody else to make plays too. So, I get everything's got to click, but I think if everything is clicking and you're going mano a mano, I think the Titans are the better team and they should win the game. But I understand that all of that has to click. That's how this works. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, actually Robbie Stanley this week, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 9:30 to 11:30 live at Corner Pub downtown, 151 Fifth Avenue North, prior to the Titans taking on the Colts. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. We'll have much more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. But first, Willie, you're going to tell us about QC Kinetics.
Yes, I will. QC Kinetics. If you're tired of living with chronic pain, I'm talking knee pain, joint pain, etc., listen carefully, because now there's new treatments available right here in Nashville, right in our listening area. Not talking surgery or steroids. These are regenerative treatments from the medical professionals at QC Kinetics. QC Kinetics, leader in these exciting biologic therapies that help restore and repair the damaged tissue in your joints with lasting results. So if you've been frustrated with this kind of thing and you haven't figured out the solution, maybe you've had a surgery, maybe somebody's suggesting surgery for you, this is something you're going to want to look into. Check out these new treatments. They've got great patient satisfaction reports. They can help your body restore and repair itself. No drugs, no surgery. So call now and schedule your free consultation. You owe it to yourself. Explore all the options. QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. You want to get moving again? Learn more about the biologic therapies that are changing the way we think about dealing with joint pain, the wear and tear of life when you're a battler, when you're a weekend warrior, when you like to get out there and keep moving around, which is what you want to do. Don't wait. Call now. QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024.
It's family time in Smashville this Saturday at Bridgestone Arena with 12:30 afternoon hockey. The Spooky Smashville Family Pack includes 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and 4 free skate passes at Ford Ice Center. The first 5,000 kids to arrive will receive a Halloween tote for arena trick or treating. Prices start at $129. See you in Smashville. Get tickets today at NashvillePredators.com/FamilyPack. Welcome back in, Darren Donick and Chase. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you on this Wednesday. So a couple of big things going on.
Big things.
In sports, and unfortunately for the wrong reasons. We told you about and talked about this a little bit yesterday, the Blackhawks and the sexual assault scandal going on with that organization. Stan Bowman, longtime GM, resigned in the midst of all of that and the findings that came out. Joel Quenneville, who is now the head coach of the Florida Panthers, was with Chicago a long time. He has been implicated in the findings. Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM of the Winnipeg Jets, who was with the Blackhawks at the time, has been implicated as knowing what was going on during all of this. The former video coach is the accused here. So you have that, and the findings have been, you know, released. And then you have the Washington football team, that there was the NFL conducted an investigation on, you know, things going on in that organization that were inappropriate, and Roger Goodell and the NFL saying they are not going to release the findings of that. Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, which obviously is tied to this because John Gruden, this is where all the emails came from that led to his resignation from the Raiders, because this was to Bruce Allen and others involved with Washington at the time when Gruden was not coaching in the NFL. Mark Davis wants the report to be revealed. So a lot of layers to both of these stories, but unfortunate because you have the Blackhawks that had that dynasty going on during that time when all this allegedly took place. And, you know, now
– and the Washington football team, anything but a dynasty.
No, anything but a dynasty. More of a dumpster fire.
Yes. So, you know, that's the one of many differences in the two, but there are a lot of similarities as well. Like, because the question comes back to this: when you're the leadership of the league, what do you do when you are presented this? Nobody wants to wake up and say, "Hey, you know, we got an issue here. We get this is what happened." These things happened a long time ago, but they've come to light for various reasons. So it's hard to sift through and know exactly what to do, because no matter what you do, there's going to be a lot of pushback. Let's take the Blackhawks. I've read a lot more on the Blackhawks than I have the Washington football team. I've read a lot about the Gruden part of it. That seems pretty self-explanatory. So let's go to the Blackhawks. This stuff happened in 2010. And for those that don't know, they had a strength coach that allegedly made sexual advances to a player on the Blackhawks while they were in the midst of winning a Stanley Cup. Now, Predator fans will remember, 2010, the Predators were in a playoff series in the first round with that Blackhawks team and had a very legit chance to win that and came up short, lost in six games, maybe the most bitter loss still in franchise history was Game 5 in Chicago, where they had the lead in the closing minutes, were on the power play, ended up losing in overtime. The Blackhawks escaped that series, go on and win it, but during that is when the allegations were brought forth against this video coach.
Yeah, Brad Aldridge.
Brad Aldridge is his name. So the issue was they had a meeting, and long story short, they decided to keep it under wraps and not come forward with it, not report it to the police, not report it to, not take any action as an organization, just kind of put it aside while the Stanley Cup quest was going on, which they won. And Joel Quenneville, who is now the coach, this is of course 11 years ago, he's now the coach of the Panthers. They won three cups within the coach of the Blackhawks. Kevin Cheveldayoff is now the general manager of the Jets. Those two, along with the CEO of the team.
Well, here's the name.
You know, they were all in this meeting where everybody knew about what the allegations were and yes, what was going on. Now, if you read The Athletic, they report that everybody knew what was going on.
This is what they say. So this meeting took place in May 2010, and they discussed the reported allegations of sexual assault from former Blackhawks player that they are naming John Doe by video coach Brad Aldridge. This is Jenner and Black doing an independent investigation, which was released yesterday. In that meeting were team president John McDonough, executive vice president Jay Blunk, vice president of hockey operations Al McIsaac, assistant GM Kevin Cheveldayoff, coach Joel Quenneville, and mental skills coach James Gary. And they chose to let Aldrich finish out the season. His name is on the cup. And then they quietly let him go in the offseason.
Without letting anybody know that this had gone on. And then he goes on to another job and sexually assaults, allegedly.
A minor.
And that's when it really came back. Because there are now two lawsuits against the Blackhawks. By the Blackhawks player and then this player, this minor.
And the minor has filed a lawsuit.
Yes.
As well.
So it's like if they had taken care of the problem at the time, he never would have gotten that job. And that is the sad part of, you know, sexual predators.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes back to, you know, McDonough was the president. He was the chief.
And he was fired last summer for.
At the time, I don't think it was released as a firing, but.
Well, it says McDonough was fired last summer for pedestrian reasons, for internal strife and power dynamics, the usual C-suite politics.
Right. And at the time that they released that, I don't think that they said we're firing him. But that aside, he was the guy that was probably the head honcho that had ultimately the decision to make. And so most of the blame is being thrown his way. So the question is, what do you do if you're the Panthers? What do you do if you're the Jets? These guys were in this meeting, but that was so long ago. It wasn't your organization. They've done a good job in their current position. So if you're ownership of those teams, what do you do? That's a really tough one.
Well, I'll use the example that, you know.
And what do you do if you're the league? That's another question.
Because here, so Bowman, who resigned yesterday from the Blackhawks, he also resigned as the GM of the U.S. Olympic men's hockey team. So he's out there too. The example I used when you and I were talking about this earlier is because you make a good point that you could look at it, you know, from Cheveldayoff, who's been long gone. You know, he was assistant GM at the time. Quenneville was the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean that's a high ranking position.
Yes, it was.
But he's gone. Joe Pa knew and didn't do anything, and it cost Joe Paterno. I mean, you know, Joe Paterno was not – he was guilty in the fact that he didn't do enough to stop Jerry Sandusky.
Right.
And he knew that there was accusations and he knew there was stuff going on that shouldn't be going on.
That is generally believed to be true, although, you know, if you believe the Paterno family, I think they fight that to a large degree.
We don't know exactly what he knew, but the assumption is that he knew something.
And I think that's – a similar way to describe it, Quenneville, you know, they don't, in this investigation, they don't come down as hard as Quenneville, on Quenneville in the investigation, correct?
Right. And the difference in the two situations, in my opinion, is like, even though they didn't publicly fire Aldridge for this, they did get rid of him. He was quietly pushed aside and pushed out in the off season. And so where the difference is, you know, Sandusky was at Penn State for a good while after a lot of, you know, things were, you know, not, it was covered up. I mean, things were known and he was around for a while. So they did at least, you know, move on from him. But I mean, he goes then and goes somewhere else and allegedly hurts somebody else. So that's the problem, that even though you're being quiet about it and you got rid of him, you were too quiet because it happened again, as it appears. So if you're the Jets and you're the Panthers looking at this, you know, it's a tough position to be in, but I know if I'm in their position, I'm going, well, what else do you know that, you know, that's going to pop up in your mind of what else do you know that you haven't disclosed about something else.
Obviously, this is not our market the two of us have just read these articles. We have not investigated any of this. This is a really long-ranging thing that took place 11 years ago that has had great coverage in The Athletic. So I'm not sure I'm worthy of being able to render a strong opinion here. I think all I'm thinking is this would be a tough one. I put myself in the shoes. The Panthers, who have had very little success for a long, long time, they've got a great team right now. Quenneville has come in.
And they have a great coach.
The accolades speak for themselves. But I do think he's got to have some responsibility in this. Does that mean you have to fire him? I don't know, but I think somewhere in there's got to be some accountability for what took place in that meeting. Because if you believe at all in The Athletic reporting, that all of the players knew, their unnamed sources saying all of the players knew that this was going on, that this allegation was out there, and yet they swept it under the rug completely until the season was over and then sort of quietly let the guy go without having any public record of this is why we did this. And then he goes on and there's more repercussions for other people because they didn't do it. And so there's got to be some accountability there.
There absolutely does, because this is what we're learning. You know, the whether they're trying to protect the victim or they're trying to in some ways protect this coach, you know, because we don't know exactly what happened. Like there are allegations.
Yeah.
But we weren't there. You weren't there. Nobody was there. Nobody knows exactly what's happened. But I think the old way of trying to quietly take care of something, you just can't do that anymore.
No, that's the big thing.
And we're seeing so many cases of somebody, like, it comes out that something has happened years later, and we're just in a new age of, no, I mean, you got to take care of it right there. And I agree. I mean, this was not handled correctly.
And they fell into the trap that many have been before. Teams having a lot of success, you don't want any negative publicity, and they put that above the responsibilities to that young man who had been sexually assaulted. They allowed a guy, a really dangerous situation, continue, and it had repercussions down the road for his next employer.
Yeah, and they didn't want the embarrassment of having to come out and say, hey, this is going on.
And that would have been a big thing
at the time.
It would have been big, but it would have been the right thing to do. But you're erring on the side of doing the right thing.
But if they had done that, I know I would sit here and I would go, well, listen, that's inexcusable that has happened in that organization. But the fact that they fired him immediately and they addressed it immediately and they took care of it, they had action, that I think goes a long way.
In the meantime, tonight the Blackhawks play the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs have got their own set of problems on the ice.
Yep.
They've underachieved. A lot of pressure swirling around there. The Blackhawks, aside from this, nothing has gone right for them. They haven't led in any single game they play tonight. That's one to keep your eye on. So the Blackhawks in the Central Division, where the Predators play, an incredible era on the ice. This happened behind the scenes way, way back. They're dealing with right now so many things swirling around in Chicago right now.
Let's give something away, shall we?
Yeah.
I think we're after a tough subject, it's good to do that. This is what you need to do. Text in the keyword outdoor, 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 nothing else, no period, no exclamation point, no keyword outdoor, just outdoor, to 615-737-1025, and you'll be entered to win a pair of tickets to the 2022 Navy Federal Credit Union NHL Stadium Series as the Nashville Predators take on the Tampa Bay Lightning at Nissan Stadium on February 26. You can be a part of the 70,000 rockin' fans at Nissan Stadium. Smashville is excited to welcome the entire hockey community for a unique spectacle that celebrates the spirit of Nashville. Buy your tickets now at nhl.com/stadium-series-tickets. Keyword is outdoor, 615-737-1025 to be entered for that. We'll come back, wrap up today's show next. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, let me tell you about BetMGM. You can get your payout before the game's out with BetMGM. All you have to do is place a moneyline wager on any Thursday night football game. And if your team is up by 10 or more at halftime, you will be a winner. That's a full payout for only half the game, no matter what happens the rest of the way. Simply go to your BetMGM account, opt in each week to the Thursday night halftime payout promotion. If you want to continue wagering in the third quarter, you can keep it rolling with BetMGM's extensive live betting options. If you need to hit the sack early, use your winnings to place a one-game parlay on Sunday and go for gridiron glory. If you're new to BetMGM, just download the app and see how you can turn halftime into cash time. Make a money line bet on Thursday night, and if your team is up by 10 or more, you'll win at the half. It's only at BetMGM. Opt-in required. You must be 21 years or older. Must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see Manchester Orchestra at the Ryman Auditorium on Wednesday, November 17th? Head over to YouTube and subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see Manchester Orchestra live. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, November 1st. Welcome back into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's all brought to you by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, CBD products curated for life. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Darren McFarlane will be back with us tomorrow, as of course we will have silly underdog picks, and I know one Chris Sanders will be excited for the first time in a while. I don't know if Dr. Phil is going to make an appearance or not, but should be
tune in and
should
find
be
out.
Good.
Therapy should be a little easier for Chris this week.
Yeah, I would think so. Be sure to join Ryan Porth this Saturday at Jonathan's in Mount Juliet at 613 South Mount Juliet Road for my tailgate, but he's filling in for me. Stop by and hang with Ryan, watch the SEC Game of the Week, Georgia at Florida, and enjoy some great food and beer specials. World Series game number two tonight. You can hear that. A 7:09 first pitch on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Fried getting the ball for the Atlanta Braves as they look to go up 2-0 in this series. We talked to Tom Glavine a little bit earlier. You know, Fried has struggled at times in the postseason, but this is a huge opportunity for him and, you know, a talented young pitcher as he goes up against Jose Urquidy. Is that how you say his name? Urquidy?
Urquidy.
Urquidy.
Yeah.
So he's pitching for the Astros there in Houston, but Braves in a very, very good situation. But would love to have it 2-0 going to Atlanta.
Boy, can you imagine winning the first two games on the road in that place? But I think if you're the Braves, you're just trying to ride the wave. It is amazing to me the confidence that you gain when you're on a roll. Duvall, Rosario. And this is something we didn't mention yesterday before game one, but not always does the National League team have good options in the American League park for DH.
Yeah.
But you talk about the Braves have the perfect situation. If anything, they were going to when they go to Atlanta, they have to make the choice. Now that Soler is back and Rosario is playing so well, like, who do we play in the outfield? Now you just say, hey, the other guy's the DH.
Yeah. I mean, that's a
weapon. They have a good lineup. Usually you look at that, the American League structures their roster to have a DH. And so their dilemma is when you go to the American League park, hey, we got to take the DH out. Do we want to try to put him in the field? Remember, the Red Sox had to play Big Poppy at first base.
Yeah.
And he hadn't hardly played there the whole year. And that's not the only team that's had to deal with that. I remember way back, the Blue Jays had Paul Molitor, an older Paul Molitor, but he was one of their best players. They had to figure out a way to get him in the game. They took John Olerud out of the lineup, who hit 360 that year. So the Braves, instead of having, like, sometimes I bet you if you look year to year on DHs used by the National League team, you'll laugh. You'll like, that's the best you had for your DH? But the Braves have another excellent hitter in there.
Yeah, well, this is honestly, I've kind of loosened up on the DH rule the last few years because now that I've seen it in the National League, you know, last year during COVID, the National League did have the DH, and many thought that, okay, that was it. They'll never go back, and they did. They went back. But where I love this is the World Series because it's really the one time where you have to see the strategy play out that, one, you have the American League team that the pitcher has to hit, which never happens. And so that you know, that's interesting. And then, like you said, you have the National League team that has to figure out the DH spot. The Braves are in a great position for that. But then when they come to Atlanta, you know, what do they do? My guess is Soler's on the bench. I mean, I don't think you change anything. Jock Peterson's played so well. And obviously, Duvall, you don't touch that outfield unless you have to. And you have Soler as a big bat off the bench. But he led off the World Series last night with a home run. That started it for the Braves, DHing in that spot. And it also gives you an opportunity if you're Brian Snicker. He basically has, the way he has the lineup, he has Dansby Swanson in the nine hole, which kind of acts as a second leadoff guy. I mean, I think people look and go, well, Dansby's batting last, that's bad. No, the way the lineup card falls, it's good to have that, to be in a situation where you have a clutch hitter like Dansby Swanson batting at the bottom of the lineup to help the card flip back over to get to Soler. So I like what Snicker did in game one, but it's just another part of the strategy that both of these managers, and you know, Dusty Baker's managed a lot in the National League, so he knows that. He knows how to play the small ball, so to speak, but I love it. I think it's a fun part of it.
Now, here's the interesting part about Urquidy. He's only appeared in one game in the postseason, and he got blasted.
Yeah.
So this shows you this is probably not who they would have put out there had they not had the injuries that they had, especially McCullers. He did have a pretty solid regular season. He was 8-3, 3.62 ERA, 90 strikeouts, a whip of .99, which is outstanding. But he hasn't been pitching great. So that is a huge X factor. You think about where the Astros were against the Red Sox. Down 2-1, injuries all over the place in the pitching staff, nothing going well. Red Sox had all the momentum, and they had a couple of guys really step up pitching-wise. So that's where Dusty Baker, I think, is at his best. The psychological, he creates that environment of positivity. He makes guys believe in themselves. So I'm really curious. Urquidy against this red-hot Braves lineup. Because you would have said the same thing about the Red Sox lineup. Oh, my gosh, they're unstoppable right now. They're hitting grand slams all over the place. They can't be stopped. And then the Astros completely shut them down. Can the Astros turn the hose off on the Braves offense right now, which is feeling great about itself? The other thing I'm looking for with Max Fried. Max Fried is a guy that can give you 5, 6, maybe even 7 innings if he's really on. And wouldn't that be something to be able to take all those relievers that they're asking a lot from and give them a little extra rest? Because then you get the day off. And remember, you got to have 3, 4, 5 ready to go in games without a day off in between. So you know you're going to have to use your bullpen a lot. So this is an opportunity for Max Fried to pitch well and also take some heat off that bullpen. That Tom Glavin talked a lot about that with us earlier in the show.
The Braves did announce about 12 minutes ago that they have added Tucker Davidson, a left-hander, to the roster to replace Charlie Morton, who is officially done for the season after breaking his leg, essentially, last night's game. So they've swapped the right-hander Morton for the left-hander Tucker Davidson on the roster, and that was approved. That substitution was approved by Major League Baseball. So they've made that official.
Kyle Wright, the former Commodore, is on the postseason roster, which is really interesting to a lot of people. I don't know, but you figure everybody's going to get their turn. Based on the way the starters haven't thrown very many innings, he might get a shot to pitch a little bit here.
Yeah.
And he barely pitched this year in the big league.
Well,
right?
He was in Gwinnett pretty much the entire year. Yeah. Now, he did okay in Gwinnett, but had a sub-3 ERA in Gwinnett. But I talked to Chip Carey yesterday, the voice of the Braves, and I asked him, you know, about him, and he was like, you know, I don't know what he is. I don't think the Braves really know at this point. And I think because of all that, Kyle doesn't even know. And it's a tough situation to be in. I mean, we saw him here at Vanderbilt. He's a very talented pitcher. I think a lot of it is in between the ears, either based on just, you know, the pressure of pitching in the big leagues and also just the developmental system in which he's been in. Sometimes that works for one guy and doesn't work for the other.
That's what's interesting to me about this whole thing, having watched him at Vanderbilt. I saw a very mentally strong pitcher in college. I saw a guy as a freshman come out and be the closer on a team that came within one one game of winning a second straight College World Series. Then he turned into the ace of the staff. I saw poise. I saw mental toughness. So it really surprised me that that part of it has gone south. But I think there was a lot of expectations of how you're supposed to pitch, how they teach Braves pitchers coming up through how to pitch. It maybe didn't quite mix with his own philosophy or how he had been taught how to pitch. I think he's fought that. The good thing for Kyle Wright is he did have some postseason success last year. So he's been in there. He was thrown in there last year. He had the one bad start against the Dodgers, but he had a very good start prior to that in the division series. Or, you know, I guess there were different rounds. He had a, I think he had a win against the Marlins.
You have it reversed.
Didn't he have a, no, he won against the Marlins, didn't he, in the first round?
He had a clunker, and then he had one where he redeemed himself. And I can't.
The clunker was against the Dodgers. I remember that. He got bombed in the first inning.
And they never went back.
It didn't go well there. But I think he had some good starts leading up to that. So he's been in some postseason. And we'll see if he even has any, you know, high responsibility here. I'm just wondering.
I think they'll use him out of the pen. You got Drew Smyly that is a starter that you can use out of the pen too.
You got to have about eight relievers ready for every game.
No, I agree. We'll see. The lineups are not out yet. I know MLB.com has speculated potentially putting Rosario back in the leadoff spot, moving Soler to the five hole, but we'll see what Brian Snicker decides to do with his lineup as game two later on tonight. Again, you can listen to that right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for joining us. Darren will be back in the fold tomorrow. We'll have Silly Underdogs.
And what time does the show start tomorrow?
The show starts tomorrow morning at 10, but stick around. Stillman and Company.
Or the show starts tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Yes, you can do either
one of
those.
You can do one of those, too.
It works either way. But stick around. Stillman and Company, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.